Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready or not, here we come. It's VGC, the video game podcast with me, Jordan Midler, Pete Donaldson, and Simon Parkin. This week, Warner are doubling down on live service, Nintendo has silenced a popular emulator, and Rockstar devs aren't happy. But first, how are we doing, folks? Simon, thank you for coming on the podcast. Of course, I can only imagine that after speaking to people like Yoshinori Kitase, that speaking to me and Pete is a bit of an upgrade, a bit of higher up there contributions to the game industry. Thank you. Pete, you've got to have opened like Unity at some point with ideas of making the next great indie game.
I was more of a, I think it was AGA, the something games, the adventure games author thing, which would make like really bad versions of like Sierra games and stuff. As you know, my only level is talking about LucasArts in the 90s. So the only time I've ever attempted to play a game, make a game rather, has been through that. It was atrocious. It was difficult. And my heart goes out to anyone who's muddied their feet in the game of era of game development.
I'm quite a pervert for analytics, so I look up this podcast's audience all the time. And for most gaming podcasts, it's like 18 to 25 guys in like college years. For us, it's right in that like 25 to 35 range. It's like
that's all right.
That's probably because of the things we talk about. But you know,
that's a good seven. Well, you're dragging it down with Pokemon, and you know, well, I'm dragging it up to somewhere close to my age of 42. So it's good stuff.
Pokemon's 30 in 2 years. That's getting to the point now where it's a retro series. Simon, tell us a little bit about My Perfect Console. Very much the sophisticated older brother to the VGC Torag podcast.
Well, thank you. Well, so I invite a guest on each week and ask them to pick the five video games they want to put on their very own fictional console. So, you know, a bit like a SNES Mini or something like that. And it's really just a way to talk about people's memories about games. And, you know, that sort of forms a bit of a backbone to talk about their life and career as well. And I try and invite a, you know, range of guests from not only people who make video games, but, you know, from other industries as well, musicians and actors and things like that as well. So comedians.
It's a very, very good podcast. However, I want to know how on earth you get these people to be so candid, because when we interview the exact same people in a game setting, they can't say anything. See, if we had Kitase on and he mentioned like a remake of a Chrono game, Square Enix would have like shut that interview down right now. They would have bombed my house like surface to air missile. What's your tip for getting these people relaxed and comfortable?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good point with the Kitase interview. When it started out, I was a little worried actually for the first kind of 10 minutes, because he's definitely on script and talking about Final Fantasy Rebirth and how he hopes it's going to sell lots of copies, and you know, so I was quite eager to get him off topic as soon as possible. And I think that's something I've learned over my years as a games journalist, is that, you know, people have the things that they want to say, and that's fine. They can say that. But as soon as you can get them off the script, they start to talk to you like a human being. So the benefit of the podcast is that I can ask people, what was your childhood like? Where did you grow up? What did your parents do? What were you like at school? These are things that they have not been PR trained to answer, at least not at this point. You know, maybe in future years, that would be something they get prepped for. But yeah, you know, and as soon as, I guess 10 minutes into that interview with Kitase, I said, you know, what were you like at school? I heard you drew comics, because I'd asked him about that a few years ago and he'd mentioned it there. And his sort of face lit up, and then he just starts going, yeah, I was really into, I came up with this detective character when I was at school, and I would one day in the week write down the crime in a little comic book script. And then the next day I'd turn up at school with the solution of how my detective character came up with it. And, you know, it's sort of, as soon as a person starts talking about their memory like that, they're being authentic, you know, yeah. or whatever. They're just speaking from, you know, who they are as a person. And then, you know, later on in the conversation, I think the point you make about Chrono Trigger. So for anyone who's not heard that episode, he says to me, oh, you know, I want to ask you a question, Simon. How would you go about remaking Chrono Trigger? And I sort of fell off my chair. I was like, oh God, a bit too much
pressure.
That was
the news headline coming out of that podcast right there.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, the fact that he was asking me that question, I think meant that no PR was going to barrel in and go, you can't ask that. As a member of the executive board of like Square Enix, I'm going to stop you from doing that. So, you know, but you have to get to that point in the conversation where it's being candid and open and, you know, they feel relaxed, I suppose.
I heard that episode and I think that it was a real shame, Simon, that you just said more babes, please. I think it's disgusting.
You like, the you man like yourself you've become. There, Simon.
Yeah. A lower cleavage for Chrono, please.
It did make me laugh because as part of the Games Media World Karate, I got to hear it before it went out and you were like, yeah, I want it to be authentic. Like, and I was like, oh, mate, every AAA great gamer is like screaming at you. They want it to be a $300 million budget game. They want it to take 15 years to come out. Like, But yeah, it's my perfect console. Great podcast. As someone who loves Tetris and loves the band Churches, the fact that in subsequent weeks you had Ian Cook from Churches and Tetsuya Mizuguchi, I was just like, this is, it's a bit on the nose now, Simon. Are you going to get Henrik Larsson on the next episode? Like, come on now. But we proceed. Point of order, there's another podcast in this feed from earlier in the week. Myself and Chris Scullion, very much the Bobby the Brain Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon of VGC, reviewed WWE 2K24, which is good fun. It's the best one of those they have done in a long, long time. However, last night I found out that that game has a completely free camera if you're speculating. If you're spectating, and you can pull it all the way out of the stadium, all the way out of the skybox. Until
it's like Boundary
all...
Break on YouTube. Yeah, it was absolutely insane how far you could go out.
That's just part of the game. So check that out at Jordan Midler on Twitter before 2K patch it, because someone from 2K liked that tweet immediately following me posting it. And I was like, well, that's the fun.
Yeah,
done.
It's over, yeah. Glass ceiling created. There's enough glass ceilings for the female talent in that game.
Exactly.
Just create another one, John. Thank you.
Exactly. That's what I do. Speaking of the fun, stopping story number one, Warner Brothers reiterates plans to increase focus on free-to-play and live service. Speaking at the Morgan Stanley conference, which we all attended, J.B. Perrette, the company's CEO of Global Streaming and Games, said, quote, "The majority of our business revolves around four main forms of IP games, which are all billion-dollar-plus businesses themselves. They are Mortal Kombat, Game of Thrones, DC, and Harry Potter. While last year's Harry Potter spin-off, Hogwarts Legacy, was 2023's best-selling game, this year's Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League failed to meet company expectations." The quote continues, "The challenge we've had is that our business historically has been very AAA console-based, and so, as you know, that's a great business. When you have a hit like Harry Potter, it makes the year look amazing. Then when you don't have a release, or unfortunately, we also have disappointments, we just released Suicide Squad this quarter, which was not as strong, it just makes it very volatile." Before we get on to Zaslav, who is really the Grim Reaper of the media apocalypse that's going on at the minute, Simon, so we have a company that makes the best-selling game of the year. They have a live service game that doesn't do well. Their solution, more live service games. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I do play some live service games and they absolutely fulfill a function and they're very popular. But of course, it's, you know, it's a very crowded market. It's extremely high risk, isn't it? You know, trying to muscle in with Fortnite and Warzone and everything else that's going around. So, you know, and I worry as well that it stifles creativity. You know, everything has to be a forever game, you know, the size of Instagram or something. You know, that's going to lead to more conservatism probably, and you know, so I think, yeah, thumbs down from me basically.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, Pete, if you were in charge of Warner Brothers and you just saw that the Harry Potter game wasn't like a small budget game, but it wasn't like one of these Spider-Man 200 million jobs, and it's the best-selling game of the year, and you have the Game of Thrones license, all the DC licenses, would you go, let's throw more money at live service, or would you maybe think, let's do another single player?
I'd maybe explain to the people who get concerned about how much money the Warner Brothers team are turning in. I'd probably explain to them that you can't have every year looking the same, and maybe there are peaks and troughs inherent in any business, and maybe you should just chill the fuck out. I think that's probably what I would, you know, maybe just adjust your projections accordingly on that. And I think at a time when most video game companies are moving away from free to play towards free to produce, aka firing everyone in their company, I would say that it's probably sensible that you take a more sanguine opinion about your income, and there will be peaks and troughs, and you can't always have a big hitter every single year, because these things take a long time. Unless you want 16 studios firing off hits every year, you're just not going to get it every time, are you?
It's especially strange because they talk about later in the quote, rather than just launching a kind of one and done console game, how do we develop a game around, for example, Hogwarts Legacy or Harry Potter, that's a live service where people can come the day and live and work and build and play. It's like these executives were vaguely told what Fortnite was, and they're like, okay, let's just transplant all of our properties onto this kind of game, and not having the example within their own studio of, if this was the previous generation, Hogwarts Legacy 2 would be out next year or the following year. It would do better than that first one, and that's just like guaranteed money. Now if they put out like Suicide Squad is a huge property. It's got big film stuff attached to it, and it's got a developer that people prior to this game absolutely loved, and it died on its arse. Like, I don't get it. It's concerning. Simon, do you think this live service thing is a bit of a bubble, or do you think that this will continue to be the kind of the golden goose? Because they try 1,000 of them, but if one of them works, that pays for 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the calculation, isn't it? They're going, you know, this is probably will fail, but if it's one of the ones that makes it through, then it's going to pay off big time, right? And so for a company the size of Warner Brothers that I suppose mainly just deals in, it only wants mega hits, right? It's only dealing with IPs of a certain size, and that's the expectation. So I think they will keep gunning for these sort of, you know, very, very big opportunities. And I suppose the success of the Harry Potter game last year probably makes them think, oh, if this had been a live service game, then imagine how much more money we would be making for the next 5 years, kind of thing. So that the, you know, even if there's only a 30% chance that would get away, it's probably worth taking that gamble if you're Warner Brothers, right?
Yeah, I think so. Warner Brothers should maybe focus on spending less money on taking me round on a studio tour. Because when I was in LA last week, we went on the Warner Brothers studio tour, and young Sheldon was there. The actor who played young Sheldon was just walking about the back lot while all these journalists like gawped at him and like spoke to each other and didn't really speak at him. And he just started going, thanks for coming to Warner Brothers. And I'm like, do you work here? Do you just like, stand
he's
here?
He's the tour guide.
The come pass? He's a very tall man. He's not so young Sheldon anymore. He's like kind of NBA adjacent player. We also saw Wallace Shawn, which was a bigger highlight for me personally, but Warner Brothers in an interesting spot. It's weird that, I mean, Warner Brothers are having a real banner week. This isn't in the news, but they shut down Rooster Teeth yesterday after failing to find a buyer. I know Rooster Teeth is like, it's a product of an old version of the internet. Like, they weren't doing the big numbers. They didn't really adapt to modern kind of gaming tastes, but they had like a huge community, and they managed to pack like thousands of people in for these conventions and stuff like this. Pete, when does this all blow up? When do we finally get rid of this capitalism thing for good?
well, I mean, when you sell your company, you basically make a deal with the devil a little bit, and those kind of market forces or even just boardroom forces are something you've got to kind of deal with, unfortunately. So, I mean, they could have stayed independent, couldn't they, presumably? I mean, they didn't have to be bought out. But obviously, it's always a shame when this sort of thing happens. But that's unfortunately what happens when companies like Warner Brothers, and I speak as an employee of Warner Brothers Discovery doing voiceovers for D-Max. I'm sure I'll be out my arse pretty soon. I won't be able to talk about My Feet Are Killing Me or Ice Road Truckers or people building a shed in the Alaskan mountains for very much longer. But it's a real shame. And it's a shame that these kind of almost independent voices, who are obviously owned at the end of the day by big companies, are being lost here and there. But they'll probably find themselves independent again, and they'll probably find themselves that they've still got a really active community they can monetize and probably make a bit more cash out of them.
Yeah, it's sad that Red versus Blue was like some of the first internet video about games I ever saw. But alas, story number two: Switch emulator creator settles Nintendo lawsuit for $2.4 million. Tropic Haze, creator of the Switch emulator Yuzu, which I've personally never heard of. I didn't even know you could emulate Switch games. This is news to me, brother. Was sued by Nintendo last month for all the money in the world. The platform holder had claimed Yuzu was, quote, facilitating piracy at a colossal scale. On Monday, the two parties mutually agreed on a monetary settlement and permanent injunction. As part of the judgment by the US District Court of Rhode Island, Tropic Haze was issued with a permanent injunction preventing it from offering or marketing Yuzu or any of its source code in the future. The members are also prevented from creating any future software that circumvents Nintendo's technical protection, and Tropic Haze must surrender all website domains and information related to its emulator. This permanent injunction constitutes a binding court order, and any violations by Tropic Haze or its members will be subject to the full scope of the court's contempt authority, including punitive and monetary sanctions. The initial lawsuit claimed that The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom was pirated over 1 million times in the week and a half before its release. Simon, emulation is a topic that we talk about a lot. I feel like it becomes more contentious when it is emulation of a company's current like console. How do you feel about how Nintendo's handled this, and where is your line when it comes to emulating something that the company is still actively trying to make money on?
That's a good question. I mean, I use emulators lots for old games, of course. And I have not only MAME, but also, you know, console stuff as well. And
yeah,
I think it's such a valuable way to preserve older games and to access them, and to, you know, I'm a big fan of the fan translation scene as well, that brings across titles that never left Japan for the Super Nintendo or whatever, and you can play through those. I agree with you though. If it's the week and a half before a game comes out and you've got more than a million people downloading it, that's only going to hurt everyone, I think, ultimately. And I think perhaps for young game players, they can think, oh, Nintendo is a huge company, it's not really going to hurt them. But of course, it has knock-on effects to smaller independent developers. And you only have to go back and look at the Nintendo DS and the widespread piracy for that device. Essentially, eventually shut down Nintendo DS development, which had a knock-on effect on all of those studios around the world that only have 10 or 30 employees, right, who are making Nintendo DS games. And so I can't really see what other choice Nintendo had than to pursue this aggressively and try to get it shut down. The grey area, I suppose, is at what point does it become acceptable for emulators to proliferate and for people to start using them? And I suppose, you know, that's up to an individual's judgment at what point they feel comfortable with that.
Andy made the point last week on the podcast that I was actively reviewing Tears of the Kingdom while large swaths of the game were being posted on Twitter, because it's so simple. I've not done the user stuff, but I know how it works, because it came as part of a package for EmuDeck, which is like an emulation overlay for Steam Deck, which installs basically every popular emulator. It is so simple, it almost feels like it's endorsed. Like, it's not back alley stuff. This is one Google away. This is one, like, it was one YouTube video away until Nintendo really cracked down on it. Pete, where do you stand on modern stuff? Does it feel a little bit like, I don't know, because I don't do this anymore, police, but back in the day when I was a young teenager, I had no qualms about pirating every single film and album that came out the week it came out. But for some reason, games, it feels a wee bit strange to me. How do you stand on it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of bad faith arguments, obvious bad faith arguments in the kind of modern emulation space. Retro emulation, the video game companies have only got themselves to blame, because they literally don't allow certain games to be downloaded, certain games to be licensed, and it's just simply because of decisions they made about 20 years ago about a piece of music, a bit of artwork, stuff like that. So I think it's incredibly necessary for the preservation of games. It's just becoming harder and harder to experience legendary titles from back in the day, even quite recent ones as well. They're just not available anymore because it's not financially viable for companies to keep them available, which is a imagine if, you know, The Godfather wasn't available to be watched, to be experienced. Like, it seems...
I thought you were talking about EA's The Godfather game. I was like, yes, now we're talking.
Yeah, agree, all of that. So yeah, I think there are a lot of silly arguments that people just sort of say through their teeth. But I mean, fundamentally, it sounds like Yuzu's kind of fallen foul of this ruling simply because I think A, it had some keys involved that were, you couldn't sort of say that was reverse engineered. That was
like proprietary Nintendo stuff.
Yeah. And also I think if you're going to be charging people on Patreon, I think that always gets companies rankled. I think they were turning in 30K a month. Now, I don't know how long they were turning that kind of performance in, but 2.4 million does not go into 30K a month without a few payday loans in there as well. So yeah, it's going to be a difficult time for anybody seeking to emulate any part of the Nintendo world. But you know, we knew this was happening. We knew this was going to happen, and it's a real shame. But I mean, I think you reviewing a game while people are already playing it, they need to deal with the leaks fundamentally. Nintendo, they need to deal with the games not being leaked before the release date. I mean, they could probably work on that first and then start kicking
heads. That seems like it's been. Since the pandemic, the supply chain has changed in a way where games are arriving at shops so much earlier than they used to. So as soon as one person finds a cart, they work it for minimum wage in a Walmart and fucking nowhere America. They're like, well, if I give this to my mate, what's the worst thing that can happen? And I'm going to say that I assume, so as not to allege anything here, but if you're the first person that has a game and you can provide that dump, some money changes hands. That is, there is a...
But that was always the case, wasn't it? There was always, whenever you'd sort of, a friend would get a pirated game at the start, it would say, if anybody's got any day one stuff, we will pay good money for it. These massive cracking organisations back in the day.
Yeah. Back in my day, it was just going to GeForce on Union Street in Glasgow, and they would always just, as soon as they got the game, they would sell it to you. Yeah. I remember, what was the really broken Assassin's Creed? Assassin's Creed Unity. They sold it to us like 2.5 weeks early just because they got their shipment and to the point where we took it home and it still had like the prototype testing name. It was like AC AC Renaissance or something. The trophies didn't work. Like, it was proper. This is too early to get this kind of
thing. I remember playing a Hitman beta quite like back in like the noughties. Like, there was I think it was Hitman 2 beta. Copied off a copy of a copy, and that was like months before that arrived. Yeah. I mean, God knows how that escaped.
I remember when Metal Gear Solid came out, the American one, there was a shop in London in Soho Square. There was a game shop long gone now, but they would sell it to you, but they would have to put it in a bag under the counter, and then so you'd have to say what you wanted. But
the real spirit of Soho still kicking and screaming.
Exactly. So.
Trench coat business.
I've told this story before, but the week that the PlayStation 4 was due to come out, there's a little local game shop in Paisley, Game Center, God rest it, who I got really close with because I was in there constantly. Like, every week I would buy the new games, complete them in that week, then the following Friday I'd trade them in and buy the new game. So I was there constantly. And I'd had my PS4 pre-ordered and paid up. And we got close to the point where they were also breaking street date for me. And I just kept texting the guy that week. And I was like, is it in yet? Is it in yet? Is it in yet? And then on the Tuesday to the Friday, that was coming out on a Friday, on the Tuesday, he just sent me a picture of a big bin bag and he was like, come and get it. So he walks out the side, like the back door of the shop to go into the shopping center is like where the deliveries come in. Like normal cars aren't meant to go in there. Me and my dad drive in there and he comes out and just hands us this bin bag with a PS4 in it and we fucking book it up the road. And it's
chilling.
Like the greatest moment ever.
Absolutely chilling. A man texting you a picture of a bin bag saying, come and get it.
Yeah.
Too trusting, John.
It was unbelievable. Then I came home and I said to my mom, I was like, I'm not going to school for the rest of the week. This is it is over. Like, this is glorious. FIFA 14, Killzone Shadowfall. Come on now. PS4
I'm retelling the story when you're found in a bin bag, Jordan.
Andy Robinson texts you, says, come and get it.
Come and get it. Come and bury Jordan. You'd need to. You are gigantic, Jordan. You're very tall.
Yeah. I need some kind of like Andre the Giant style coffin to get me gone. God rest him. Next story, The new game and the Titanfall's director, the new game from Titanfall's director is reportedly set in the same universe. Please, God, don't cancel it. That's according to Giant Bomb reporter and friend of the show, Jeff Grubb, who was discussing Respawn's current projects after it was confirmed the EA had cancelled a Star Wars FPS, which is genuinely tragic. He said on Games Mess Morning, there's always conversations about Titanfall 3. Whenever I do look into it, they're not making Titanfall 3. They just straight up aren't. They do have another team that has been kicking around a Skunkworks project, which, if you're not familiar, Skunkworks, very early development, just ideas. Maybe someone makes a mechanic or part of a level to try and get something going. Very early prototyping. There's a different phase. There's different phases of prototyping. There's very, very early small team projects. Grub basically explains this. This game, as it stands today, as far as I understand, is a Titanfall game. I'm doing air quotes here. It's in the Titanfall universe. But everyone I talk to keeps saying, well, it's not. Don't get in your mind it's Titanfall 3, like a game with online multiplayer and a single player campaign. I'm like, well, wait, what? Then how is it? What is this game? I still don't know. When I was at Respawn recently, I asked about Titanfall 3 and they just went, ha 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 ha. Simon, why will they not give us a sequel to the best single player game of the last 10 years?
Oh, I don't know. I loved it. I love Titanfall 2 so much. Yeah, it's great. You saying Titanfall so many times, it's made me want to go and play it this week, in fact. So
that's the old meme. It's like with the original Deus Ex. As soon as someone mentions Titanfall 2, you go, oh, yeah, I could. Because it's like 5 hours. You can play that in like a day. It's a perfect game. Anyway, yes, Titanfall 3. Why not, Simon? Why are you not giving us it?
I don't know. I mean, did it not make enough money or something? What's the issue?
It was released. I remember it was released between Battlefield 1 and Infinite Warfare. So it was just... It was not an ideal time to release, so I imagine it very much didn't make any money.
That's such a shame, yeah. I mean, you reading that out, though, you said the word Titanfall so many times for a story that's about a game that's not Titanfall. So they seem very eager to like make sure that Titanfall's in the conversation, at least, about this thing.
Titanfall universe? I mean, I never understood. Apex Legends is in the Titanfall universe. Right. I have never understood why they didn't do a single player experience with one of the legends, and then you can spend a whole season in the live service game telling people go and play the single player thing. Like it makes all the sense in the world to me. Like, sure, you might not put something on a shelf called Titanfall 3, but another single player game with those mechanics, like, I just don't understand it. But I mean, if EA is at the point where they're like, Respawn, yeah, you're one of the top five developers in the world. Yeah, you're making a game based on one of the most beloved IPs of all time. Cancelled. Don't worry about it. It's done. Like, maybe they're just in a position where they're like, if we can't guarantee this is going to be a banger, like a new Star Wars Jedi game that's proven like more Titanfall content, we just can't move forward with it.
Yeah, I mean, don't give us the title Titanfall universe. Give us the Titanfall mechanics. I mean, I don't think anybody really cares about the universe, do they? It kind of left me a bit cold, but I very much enjoyed the game.
I think the guns look cool. I think the design of the Titan, the guy's mask is pretty cool. But apart from that, it's not like...
Did you buy that big expensive special edition Titanfall 2 where you had the helmet? Like,
no.
eBay for like a grand now.
The problem is, like, I also wanted the Titanfall 1 special edition that came with a big Titan and a big statue. And you could get those in-game for like £50 when those shops were liquidating, because they were just like, get all this shit out of our our wear. Like, I got
it's very flammable.
Yeah,
we didn't know.
I got an Overwatch 1 collector's edition for £10, and that had like a big statue in it. I was like, okay, this is good, but I never pulled the trigger on the Titanfall one, and the Gears of War Lancer, and all this crap that could be filling my house now. It makes me worried when we hear about all this stuff getting cancelled. And all this, like, all these creators feeling stifled. Like, Pete, what are we going to be playing in, like, 5 years? Is there going to be any games? Are they going to be like, oh, shit, we cancelled everything 5 years ago and now there's no games?
All of the developers found other jobs. So we are literally just taking video games we found in Amstrad Action from the 90s and typing them out. They're the only ones that we have to develop them ourselves, all the people in the boardroom. So yeah, maybe it'll be that. Maybe it'll be like Jet Set Willy clones up the wazoo.
Yeah, it's a sad situation. I think Apex Legends is a pretty cool game, but it's crossed the Rubicon of being pretty hardcore to where anytime I jump into it, I get absolutely battered. Whereas Warzone is so popular that that never happened. I can always have a bit of a power fantasy with Warzone because the guy who has a PlayStation 5 but works all the time gets like 1 hour a night, he plays Warzone, and I'm on him. I'm like chasing him down and like assassinating him.
What
a
lovely story,
street.
John. What a,
yeah.
What a heartfelt games, rendition of what gaming should be.
Games are designed to make me feel better, okay?
Forget the guy's been doing a 10-hour shift.
Yeah. I'm doing a 10-hour shift down the guide mines, mate. I'm writing about serious stuff. How to date Tifa in Final Fantasy Rebirth. Important stuff. God. It's been fun seeing people get that game, having completed it about 3 weeks ago, seeing people get through it and then get to the Kate Sif part, who has an interesting voice in the new game, voiced by a Scottish person. It's like,
oh,
I am in contact with them. I want to get them on this podcast and I want them to do the Kate Sif voice through the whole thing. but we shall
do it in
see.
Character.
Yeah, exactly. God, what a game. After we come back, Rockstar are being weird. Can you believe it? We'll see you in a minute.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And we are back. Next story. Grand Theft Auto 6 devs hit out at Rockstar's, quote, reckless return to work mandate. The company has told employees they must return to the office full time in April. Last week, Rockstar informed staff of plans to end its hybrid working policy for, quote, productivity and security reasons. This follows all those GTA 6 leaks you're still seeing on your TikTok. Rockstar's head of publishing, Jen Colby, said the company found that there are, quote, tangible benefits from working in person. That's according to Bloomberg. The decision has been heavily criticized by the Independent Workers Union of Great Britain and a number of its members who are Rockstar employees. They say the plan to withdraw remote work provisions for the majority of staff on April 15th represents the latest in a series of broken promises, and that it could lead to the return of unhealthy working practices at the company. Simon, I go to you. I'm honestly surprised it took this long, knowing what Rockstar have historically been like and knowing a little bit about what the reaction was like internally when all that stuff got leaked. This is a shame, but perhaps not surprising.
Yeah, perhaps not surprising. Yeah, I mean, I suppose the quote that there are tangible benefits from in-person work. I mean, of course, there are tangible benefits from flexible working as well, right? And all of the evidence shows that it doesn't take a hit on productivity and that people have improved work-life balance. And so, you know, this sort of the company line here, I think, is a little disingenuous, or at least not the full story, right? So I think it's important to challenge what Rockstar's saying there. But yeah, at the same time, if the real reason for this is to, you know, put an end to leaks, I can't imagine they haven't already got highly secure ways of people logging into their servers from home. This would have been sorted out years earlier, right? It's not like GTA 6 development only started a few months ago. I mean,
yeah.
I can't see how it's really going to be fixing any of those issues at this point. So what is it? I mean, perhaps it's just this is a way that we can make sure everyone's crunching. That seems like the most plausible explanation, but I don't want to say anything libelous on here. So,
join the long list. The lawsuit literally can't get any bigger, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Our lawyers are on crunch.
The story continues. Last year, unionized Rockstar workers submitted a petition with 175 signatures calling for continued remote work options in response to the mandatory transition to a three-day office week. At the time, Rockstar reportedly stated in an employee-wide email, quote, "This isn't our first step to 5 days a week. No one wants to go back to the old way of working," end quote. An anonymous employee said, quote, "Working from home has been a lifeline for many of us at Rockstar, allowing us to balance our care responsibilities, manage disabilities, and relocate if we need. Now Rockstar is snatching away that lifeline without a second thought for the workers who'll be impacted most. After so many broken promises, we now fear management may even be paving the way for a return to the toxic crunch practices. Senior leadership need to rethink their reckless decision making and engage with their staff to find an arrangement that works for everyone." Pete, Rockstar had a terrible reputation, but it seems like in the wake of Red Dead 2, and this is certainly the case from Rockstar people that I've talked to, they seem to get better. Like, the company culture seemed to do a complete 180. But is this them slinking back to their old ways?
Did that increase in working conditions, or improvement in working conditions anyway, coincide with a few of the members unionising?
Could also coincide with a lot of the old guard getting turfed out. Like, it's impossible
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, it's interesting to see that the unionised Rockstar workers have submitted a petition with 175 signatures. It sounds like not every employee is union. Obviously, not every employer has taken up that opportunity. So it's kind of incumbent on that union to get stronger and start pulling up some trees, I suppose, or work hard on that side of things. We've had, how long has Rockstar been working on this title, and how many leaks have there been fundamentally? We've had, like, it's been a lot of footage, but I think there's only one. Only one instance of somebody leaking some footage. So, like, how many people are working on this game, from artists to PR to marketeers to programmers to sound designers, and that's the only thing that's come out? I mean, that seems like that could happen anyway. Everyone's got a mobile phone in their pocket. It's not, you don't need a John Le Carre style, Cold War tiny camera to, process some film or something. Like, everyone's got a recording device in their pocket. So if somebody wants to get something out, they will get something out. And I mean, I don't know how these leaks happened in the first place. Were they sort of taken from someone's hard drive without them knowing? Were they leaked by the person who was actually programming the game? I mean, presumably all of these things are still open for business, for people who want to see footage of an unfinished alpha build of Grand Theft Auto.
I believe what happened was someone remotely accessed a computer belonging to someone working on the game.
Right, well, there you go then. So, what's that? You could do that to a server, like, just make your server links more secure.
Also, if you want to know about GTA 6, go for a drink in a student pub in Edinburgh, and someone in there will be working on QA on GTA 6. Buy them a drink and they'll tell you all about it. I think this is a case of, in the lead up to Rockstar reestablishing themselves as, like, the absolute alpha of this industry, like, there's nothing like GTA. That launch is going to be completely unprecedented. I bet there's a huge internal pressure. Like, they know people are expecting this to be the greatest game of all time, and it doesn't make like moral sense, but they're probably like, when we made those 10 out of 10 games previously, everyone was tearing their hair out in the office. Like, maybe we need to do that Rockstar magic, that divorce creating, mental health destroying Rockstar magic that we all need.
It was a real kind of eye opener for me. I had some ideas about how video games are made, and then I did a radio show, promotional radio show with Laszlo. From Grand Theft Auto, and I was like, it's a lot of quite toxic individuals that seem to be making this game.
Mate, they're called Rockstar for a reason. The stories that cannot be told in this podcast would make your head look like mine. It's a dodgy situation.
The thing is, though, that they're not under, this is my understanding, is it's not like they're under financial pressure to release GTA 6 at a particular date, because GTA 5 is still extremely profitable and making the money all the time. So I suppose, as an outsider, you think, well, why not just make your release date later, in a way said it at a point which doesn't force everyone to work really unhealthy working hours. And of course, all of those changes you reference after Red Dead 2 were in as a result of that terrible PR that they had, you know, the Bloomberg story, I think it was, or, you know, with everyone just talking about how bad it had been working on that. And, you know, then there was this big sort of, well, we're going to change our culture. So why not try and avoid that situation again by just setting your release date for a reasonable point? I'm sure they have thought of these things, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I want my yacht. I want my yacht now.
I would like a yacht, to be fair, if anyone's got one going. The VGC party yacht. I am very, very, very excited. Seems weird. Like, there's like a desperate yearning within me to play GTA 6 just to see what it is, because I feel like every time a Rockstar game comes out, you can almost feel every developer in the world playing it that first weekend and going, oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, we're going to have to do this now. Oh, we're going to have... I can only imagine. The old meme was every time a new Arcane game comes out, the next on that Monday morning, the designers all come into the office and go, I've got 10 new ideas. Like, for Rockstar games, that must just be exponentially bigger. Simon, do you think GTA 6 can live up to the hype?
Yeah, I think probably. Yeah. I think it'll come out and there'll be an inevitable initial backlash. I think it'll be quite similar to GTA 5, I imagine, where people sort of play it really intensely for 15, 20 hours and go, oh, it's not quite what I was thinking. But then over a longer period of time, you know, people will warm to it probably. And the thing that I loved about GTA 5 was just the world and the environment building. It was just an incredibly pleasant place to drive around, aside from the story and following those characters, whatever you thought of that and the missions, just as an environment to knock about in. It was incredible. And I can't imagine GTA 6 is not going to be even more of that. So from that perspective, I think, you know, it will deliver, I'm sure.
I was very surprised with the last one, that how kind of the previous games 4 and 3 and those iterations, Rockstar would just release it and you wouldn't, and it would be a big surprise and everything would be amazing and all stuff. But with 5, they did spend a lot of money on, spending a lot of money with stuff like promotional radio shows and stuff like that. That I was involved in. Like, it just seemed like it smacked to me as a little bit of desperation. Maybe not realism, but it smacked to me sort of going, well, we can't keep getting away with making the biggest game ever every single time. But that's the level they've set for themselves. So I guess you can understand with 6, they are panicking inside. What if this isn't as big as Harry Potter? What if this isn't as big as that, this and that? It's a real reputational risk, I think, and it doesn't take long for video game fans to walk away from things.
I bet it's a situation wherein on Twitter, when it comes out and like we've reviewed it and stuff like this, it comes out, people are like, I'm not really feeling it. Then BBC 10 o'clock news, Mark C. Slack's there talking about the game. Like the next day, we're putting up on VGC, GTA 6 is the fastest selling entertainment property in the history of the human race. Like, I think that game is going to be, it's going to be unavoidable. They're going to like paste it on the side of Parliament. Like, it's going to be one of those games. It's not just going to be, for me, if a game is on a bus, that is a tier of, game. This is going to be like on the moon. I think it's going to be a real fascinating one. Pete, I just hope it's gone woke, don't you?
I hope so. I just don't want to see any flesh on shore.
Nope.
Which is going to be difficult in Miami, I think.
Boiling. They'll be sweating with those full suits on.
No guns. Take all the guns out.
Take all the guns away.
No guns, no swearing, no flesh.
They'll be changed to walkie-talkies like in E.T. when they re-edited E.T.
Oh, man. Well, GTA 6 review on VGC next week. Look forward to that. Final story for this week. Skylanders and Crash Bandicoot studio Toys for Bob is leaving Activision and going independent. The California studio was acquired by Activision in 2005 and has worked on Skylanders, Crash Bandicoot, Spyro, and Call of Duty. One of those things is not like the other. In a new statement released last week by studio heads Paul Yan and Avery Lodato, they announced that they'd be going it alone. Over the years, we've inspired love, joy, and laughter for the inner child and all gamers, the statement reads. I hadn't read that. We pioneered new IP and hardware technologies in Skylanders, We raised the bar for best-in-class remasters with Spyro Reignited. We've taken Crash Bandicoot to innovative, critically acclaimed new heights. With the same enthusiasm and passion, we believe now is the time to take our studio and our future games to the next level. This opportunity will allow us to return to our roots of being a small and nimble studio. Simon, interesting, this comes in the wake of Activision being subsumed into the Microsoft giant. There was some talk that maybe the Toys for Bob were pitching like a Banjo game, getting their hands on some of the old Rare toys for Bob. That seems to not have happened. How did this news strike you, dear?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to sort of imagine how this breakaway came about. You know, was it something that was mutually agreed? Was there some sort of clause in the Microsoft acquisition that said, oh, if they're not going to do this, then you're free to go if you do X, Y, and Z? I don't know. Yeah, you know, were they pushed away? Was it, you know, Activision just didn't want them anymore? And, you know, it's very difficult to tell just from that statement exactly what's behind all of this and what's pushing it. But, you know, perhaps it ultimately comes down to what we've been talking about throughout the other news stories, is that, you know, big companies like Warner Brothers and Activision want massive eternal game properties, don't they? And
Yeah. These
smaller sort of standalone titles don't really fit with that vision in the same way. So perhaps it is just a natural break in that sense.
I think it's a great piece of news in the sense that they are not stuck making Warzone skins for the rest of their natural life.
Right.
Pete, is this a win for the Wii guys?
It is, I think. They're now free to make the sequel to their celebrated title, Tony Hawk's Downhill Jam, on the Wii. So
yes, you know. Now we're talking.
A racing skating game, yes, please. Many boxes tick there.
I think this was maybe a strategical mistake by Microsoft, purely because it behooves them, and it behooves Sony as well, to have a good studio that can make kids games. They've completely given that market up to Nintendo. Sony and Microsoft don't make kids games anymore, like, at all. There's no kid-friendly platformer. Like, even the platform mascot, I suppose there's Ratchet and Clank, but even that is appealing to people that first got into those games on the PS2. Stuff like Astro Bot. It's nerds like us that love Astrobot because it's like so nostalgic for the history of PlayStation.
Well, they closed Sony Japan Studio, didn't they, as well? That made that. So.
Yeah, they held on to some of the Team Asobi people, but you're not getting. I mean, we talk about this all the time. Like the identity of early PlayStation is just completely gone. Mm-hmm. So I think Microsoft would have been smart to hold on to them, but also maybe Microsoft are like, we don't need like 90 studios. Like, we'll maybe hold on to the parts of Activision that make a quintillion dollars. But nice to see. I hope they go well. I'm sure it'll be the case where the first game comes out and it's like, this is about a red dragon with wings called Pyro. And everyone's like, well, closest we're going to get to a new one of these. Okay, that is the news for this week. Before we go, and since we have Simon here, I thought I would subject him to some of the perfect consoles of the VGC Maniacs. While I drag these up, Pete, submit your perfect console to Simon, and Simon,
all right,
give it a rating out of 5.
Oh, jeez.
Here we go, Simon. Strap yourself in, mate.
Yep.
Title number one. How to be a complete bastard on the Spectrum ZX. A game where you could fart, urinate, become drunk. If you farted too hard, if you pressed the F key for too long, you would die. And you could eat shower gel. So I can't think of a game that could not be improved by being able to eat shower gel. That's my first title. There was a game called The Adventures of Robin Hood, an isometric game on the Amiga that was very good. It was kind of a living, breathing Sherwood Forest kind of vibe to it. Absolutely fantastic. What else did I write down briefly before the show? I will go for Urban Chaos, the Mucky Foot kind of Grand Theft Auto launcher, and also Teardown from a couple of years
ago. Oh, yeah.
Well, which I very much enjoyed.
The Vita, was that on Vita? Teardown, is that right? I think you'd Tear Away, sorry.
Teardown was a like kind of voxel robbery game. I had to rob stuff from a couple of years ago. It's a stunning piece of work, and you basically spend your time planning heists by preparing the world for your extraction, mm-hmm. I guess, of all the things that you need. And it's a lot of fun.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I mean, that's a 5 out of 5, obviously.
You can't eat shower gel in it. Can't
I'll
eat
dock
any
it
shower
point,
gel in it. Can't throw spiders around.
How much do you think that would retail for?
That for? One of the a little compilation. I might start my own kind of PlayStation Plus, but you just sell these games.
Okay, Simon. Comics Dave, it calls this console the 90s number 2. Mm-hmm. It's Sonic the Hedgehog 2, Mortal Kombat 2, Doom 2, and Street Fighter 2.
Good God, that's not bad, is it?
No, it's not bad, yeah. Yeah, I didn't
coward.
That.
I'm still calling him a coward, though.
Isn't there probably a retro console already out where in which you can play all those games?
Yeah, probably.
This is from the Tokyo Game Life podcast. This will really inflame you to game number one. I Am Teacher, Super Mario, No Sweater. I don't know what that is. Have either of you heard this game?
Is that the knitting one? Is it?
Yeah,
they use this?
Right.
It used a sewing machine or something. Yeah, it had a sewing machine peripheral or something. I think it did. Yeah.
Second game, BS, The Legend of Zelda. Again, is this a... I don't know what the BS stands for, but...
Is that Bandai something? I don't know.
Maybe. Pokemon Channel, now we're talking. a serious game where you just kind of... You watch like TV... programs with Pokemon, like with Meowth doing the weather and stuff like that. And finally Pikmin 2e. So what would you rate that, and how much would you charge for that opus?
I mean, yeah, the cost of including a sewing machine with it for the three people that are going to buy it, I think it's not very commercial. But
this reeks of like an old Nintendo 500 sort of disc game, or or one of those ones that came off a satellite.
Yeah,
I love it. I love it. Yeah, very obscure. This is a slight spoiler for a future episode, but I quite enjoy it when guests pick something that's basically not a video game. So Josh Wardle, who made Wordle, he picked the New York Times crossword app, which I enjoyed. And I got a future guest, I don't think I'll say who it is, but a well-known Japanese dev who he's quite art schooly, let's say, and he wrote beforehand and said one of his picks is a screensaver. and then he said, and I'd also like to do Adobe Illustrator.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, I think, you know, pretty broad definition of what counts as a game, I think. So yeah, I'm into the sewing machine one.
VGC's very own Chris Scullion submits Toe Jam and Earl, Streets of Rage 2, International Superstar Soccer 64, and Pete was excited about this, WizKid.
Amazing.
WizKid. Yeah.
Great soundtracks on all of those.
Mm. Yes. I mean, when Chris talks about these games, I'm like, you know, the past like 20 years of games happened to you as well. Like, where the fuck's Modern Warfare 2 on this list?
I would say a Spectrum game called Gregory Loser's Clock narrowly missed out on my list. So, you know, I was being safe in many ways.
I have a special submission from one Hamish Black of the YouTube channel Writing on Games, who I was out drinking with last night, and I asked him this question, and he responded. Killer 7, Armored Core for Answer. Don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. It's just one of these games that he likes. Hitman World of Assassination and Plumbers Don't Wear Ties. That is the four games
wear ties.
Hamish Black submitted.
That's good. Phil Fish picked Hitman World of Assassination, so. But not Plumber, not the Plumber game.
No. Do you get many sort of like Philips CDI titles and stuff? Like, that's a really awful one.
No. Was there a Zelda game on the Philips CDI? I think there may have been.
Yeah, it was that. There was that where he goes, you princess. Yeah, was that, that meme? I think that was off that meme, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Wand of Gamelon or whatever that was called. There's recently been a game made in that style by, I think the company's called like CDI, but it's like SEED I, like I don't know why I had to explain what an I was to the people in this video call. Apologies. We a couple more we have from Chris Wall. he has submitted a console that would consist of Burnout 3 Takedown. Mm,
lovely.
Burnout Revenge, Burnout Dominator, and Burnout Paradise.
Something for everyone there.
Yeah, I mean, I would buy that in a second. Any reason to buy a new Burnout game would be a yes from me. I'll give you mine. I'll give you one of mine because when I become significantly more famous, I'm going to come on the podcast and libel it into the ground. My submissions. Rock Band 2, Skate 2, I'm not doing the whole 2 thing, this just happens to be 2 2s, Tetris Effect, and The Last of Us Part 2, so I kind of am doing the whole 2 thing.
Yeah, and Tetris Effect is definitely a sequel, surely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice, yeah. Yeah.
I picked Rock Band 2 rather than Rock Band 4 because of who I was when I played Rock Band 2. Mm-hmm. Like, I was this, like, 14-year-old emo kid, like, really getting into rock music, was listening to anything going, and Rock Band 2 was just, like, it expanded my mind. I would have never listened to Tokyo Hotel if it weren't for Rock Band 2. Some real quality
was
stuff.
Was that German emo band? Like that sort of operatic kind of, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they had the main guy had hair that took up like most of the Western Hemisphere. Like it was a very, very beautiful man. That kind of like androgynous lead singer really was my jam for a while there. But
what was your instrument in the game, Jordan?
So I was initially really good at guitar because I play guitar in real life, but then I got like obsessed with being good at the drums. So I can play most of the songs on Rock Band still to this day on drums on Expert. But if you put me in front of a real drum kit, I would start licking it. Like I'd have absolutely nothing to do with it.
I don't think that's true though, because like it's one of those few examples where it is a transferable skill, right?
Yeah.
Mm, that's a video series. Oh, I'll ask Andy for a budget to buy a drum kit and see how it goes.
You can have the one that's literally that I bought off Facebook Marketplace about 2 years ago. I have not touched it. The dog ate one of the sticks, and I'm looking at it right now, and it's just sat there.
Skate 2 was a similar situation. I was skateboarding, like we were really into the culture. We were watching CKY videos. We were like getting super into all those guys. Like it was there was a skateboard shop in Glasgow under the bridge at Central Station where the guys would just like sniff at you, not even look you in the eye when you like went in to have a look at the clothes, and it was a real. Really exclusionary culture. You've got to love it.
Skate shops, yeah.
Yeah. They're horrible, horrible boys. Finally, I have a submission from my partner, Laura, and she deliberated over this because I sprung this on her with 5 minutes to go. So, Ori in the Blind Forest, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, because when she was a wee girl, she played San Andreas and then used to have dreams about CJ.
That's why she dates you. I know why you guys go out.
Yeah.
I'm the spitting image if you think about it.
He wears a lot of vests.
Exactly. I walk around eating comically large burgers and then lifting weights. Like, Baldur's Gate 3, which was a recent obsession that caused a real rift in our relationship.
Oh, no, why?
Because she wouldn't speak to me because she was just playing Baldur's Gate 3. I was like trying to talk to her about something. She's like, fucking talking to a starry in here. And and finally, Bloodborne, the game. It's not. It doesn't have a subtitle, the game. It's just called Bloodborne. But
imagine if it did.
Bloodborne, the game.
The bloody.
Brilliant.
How'd you rate that?
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably my favourite, that one there. Loved San Andreas. Bloodborne, of course, is unbeatable, so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a real high-quality collection of titles there. I think that San Andreas is this weird kind of mythical game for me because I was allowed to play it when I was wee, but I wasn't allowed to do the story missions because that's where they all swore and said terrible words and was very loud that my mum could hear. But I could just go around the city. I could like drive around and like jump off buildings and stuff like that. So San Andreas.
So you just couldn't press X at any. So if she saw you getting near any of that kind of those hotspots that.
Yeah. As soon as Samuel Jackson started going absolutely mental, effing and jeffing, it was like, oh, that's can't
proceed. Sure, the NPCs used to shout all kinds of blue.
Yeah, but I lived in Paisley, mate. I could just be like, oh,
yeah, okay. That's an incidental swear word, right? Okay.
Yeah. Speaking of Bloodborne, it's almost as if it was planned. We have a copy of Blood Echoes, a Bloodborne anthology to give away. Simon, can you tell us a little about it while I drag up the winner?
Yeah, so it is one of the very high quality art and editorial books from Tune and Fairweather, who have done various books related to the From Software universe and their various games. They did one with Loki, and you know, all sorts of you. If you care about From Software games, you will know about Tune and Fairweather's books. And yeah, so this is the Bloodborne one of those. It comes in, it just uses incredibly high stock paper. You know, it's all made in Italy, and the illustrations are extremely high quality. And it's a collection of essays from just some wonderful writers writing about Bloodborne from lots of different angles. Includes an interview with Miyazaki as well. So it's, if you like Bloodborne and you care about it, it's something that I'm sure you would be interested in. And yeah, you should get a copy.
It's beautiful. It's so nice on the shelf. For my partner's Christmas there, I imported a copy of the Bloodborne artworks, that art book that they never published outside of Japan. And now on our shelf, it's like, it's got that. It's got the Blood Echoes book. It all looks very nice. And our winner via this random generator is, stop moving, it's Gilly Annandale. Congratulations, Gilly. I will reach out to you. Let me see your Twitter profile. Oh, she's from Scotland. Round of applause. Oh, come on.
This is all just come on. Big boys club. North of
come
the border.
On now.
Unbelievable.
Congratulations, Gilly, or maybe Jelly. I don't know. I'll reach out to you and ask you for the pronunciation of your name, because that's vital when sending out a book. But I will get that sent out to you shortly. Simon, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. We appreciate it greatly.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Of course. I just noticed that little parappa that's over your shoulder. Very nice indeed. that's Parappa the Rapper. God rest him. Sony Japan, man. Bring it back. I fear we'll never get back to those days. You can send our questions to comments, questions and concerns to podcast at videogameschronicle.com. Pete, what you got going on this week?
Oh God, what haven't I got going on? Going to the football ramble tomorrow. The football never stops. It will never stop. Yeah. It'll be by the heat death of the universe. I'm hearing good things about a VGC podcast coming out later today, edited by us. I'm going to combine the audition WAV files into one big file, then I'm going to compress it, and then I'll put the production in, and then I'll upload it to open.aircast.com, which nice. Is where we upload our podcast. So I'll write a very short synopsis, and it'll be out by about tea time, all right?
Oh, lovely stuff for the VGC Maniacs. Speaking of Acast, the wonderful Acast Creator Network, what's going on with My Perfect Console this week, Simon?
Right, so the guest that will be out on Tuesday for the general public is Val McDermid. She is a Scottish relevant.
Oh, no way, that's brilliant. Yeah, Scottish. Val, now we're talking.
Yeah, she's a crime novelist, has sold, I think, 17 million books or something like that. She wrote one of the recent Agatha Christie sort of revival pieces. She's been you know, playing video games for her whole life, and so we get to hear from her. She's an extreme pro and was very, very lucky to have the chance to speak to her. And she's got wonderful anecdotes and very interesting stories. So, yeah. Come along and listen to her story.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. Well, you can follow us on Twitter at Jordan Midler, at Simon Parkin, at Pete Donaldson. I can't tell you what I'm up to as of right now, but about 5 hours after this podcast comes out, I can tweet what I'm up to. So if you want to see what that is, just come and find out. Things are happening. Things are happening all the time. We'd like to thank the great Grant Kirkhope for the VGC podcast theme song. Say goodbye, Simon.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
And we'll see you next week.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you say that you're planning something, it always sounds a little bit like a every time, I can't tell you what I'm planning. I can't tell you why I'm travelling to this. Oh, God.
Check 4chan for details.
Shut the bridges down.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.